Today, we're going to finish what we started on Friday, meaning try to find a representation of the propagator as a path integral, and this on the configuration space. So why I'm specifying configuration space is because you see we can also have we can also write everything just on the phase space variable, meaning keeping P and X variables, whereas here, at the end, we only are going to be written in terms of X. Okay, the idea is to go to the kind of Lagrangian formalism, relate that to the Lagrangian formalism of classical mechanics. Okay, so, and then if you have time, we'll kind of study something that is quite, this framework is nice to study the semi-classical expansion, and see the main contribution and then the quantum fluctuation. So we'll kind of do that once we have the representation. Okay, so what was our starting point on Friday? Starting point is the time evolution operator in the position representation. And this is what we call there are different names, but most of the time I'm going to call that the propagator. In the rest of the lecture, you can also see the term kernel. There are different terminology. So here, one maybe important point is that our starting point was the Schrödinger picture, okay? And so maybe let's write it. Of course, we'll see that at some point we go back to the Heisenberg picture, but here our starting point was this. It's kind of give a nice directly interpretation of what is this propagator. And so we're here. Also, one assumption we're doing is that H is time independent, meaning that U is simply a simple exponential of an operator. Okay. And another thing that we did is that here we did a weak rotation. So this tau, these are the different steps. The weak rotation, again, is not necessary as a step here. You just have been doing it because then all the integration we're going to deal with are like kind of Gaussian integration, okay? But keep in mind that this is, and it's also nice to make some connection with statistical physics. We will see that, once we're going to work with the partition function, you recover the partition function we get in statistical physics. So the idea here is that the real time is now rotated to an imaginary time. Okay, so then in general, the H we want to consider is of this form. So we have the kinematical term. And a potential that, for the moment, we're going to consider that it's only dependent on the X, okay? This is, for some situation, it's going to work out, but this is the assumption I'm doing now. This is the kind of Hamiltonian we're considering. And then so the idea is that before even going to the path integral and what was the general, what is the point? Is that in general, even when H is time independent, it's quite complicated to have a nice representation of this object, of this time evolution operator, okay? So the question will be later on, what kind of general strategy can we find to compute this U or the matrix element here? In fact, when we work with the propagator, we're looking at the matrix elements of this operator for any kind of V, whereby any kind of V here, I'm still restricting to V dependent on X, and we will see that we can generalize that in some context. Okay, so let's first look at the case V equals zero. When V is equal to zero, this is one calculation that you did in the tutorial on Friday. You can compute that exactly using the canonical framework, okay? And, I'm working on the finite interval, so I have this expression. Where here, this is an exact, it's exact. And this is for any time interval. So here, my time interval is this 2 prime prime minus 2 prime. And it doesn't have to be a small one. Because now, what is the idea of when v is non-zero, is non-trivial now, is to divide this time interval into n equal sub-intervals. That, and then the idea is to take n very large to have the sub-interval very small. And why is it interesting? Because it's, you see that this u is written as an exponential of minus. Here you have the time interval, time h, h bar. So if the time interval is very small, then the idea is that you can expand this operator, okay, as a series. And then hopefully it's easier to deal with some polynomial function than just an exponential, okay? And see, yeah, in which case, at which order, what are the leading order, what are the correction? So here, this is a general property strategy that we started to discuss on Friday, is to divide the time interval into n. So here we're going to consider equal subinterval where that then we're going to get that epsilon. This is going to be the length of this new time interval, is going to be our initial time interval divided by n. So the idea is that when n goes to infinity, then epsilon goes to zero. Okay, so this is what we want to use. But so this is the idea, but why is it working? Okay, why is it going to work kind of nicely? Here it's because we kind of use two important properties that I want to emphasize that I already mentioned on Friday, but maybe in the flow of the discussion. So let's emphasize the property we're using. So first, we're using that for a time evolution operator. Where h is time independent. We have this nice recoupling property that is just the product. You can really do that. And for any tau that now is between tau prime and tau prime prime. So here the only thing I need to require is that we have this relation. And then indeed the time, the evolution from this time tau prime to tau prime prime can be seen as is the same as evolving from tau prime to tau and then tau to tau prime prime. Okay. You can do this first evolution followed by another time evolution. So this is kind of nice, but again remember that this is working nicely because we are in this context. And then the other property is directly on the propagator or kernel, if you want, is the convolution property of the kernel. Convolution again, we wrote that on Friday, but I think it's good to kind of emphasize why things are working or not. So here, the idea is that indeed this object where can be obtained where x here, so I'm using tau, that is between tau prime and tau prime prime. And so this time is fixed, but what now we are saying is that, yeah, at a given time, we know that our particle should be at a given should be at a position x that we don't know, so we integrate over all possible x that are anything. And to get this expression, this property, it's just using this property of the time evolution operator, and then what we're doing is that between the two, you're inserting an identity resolution on this x basis. Okay, so this was the way that we introduced them, but these are kind of two important properties. Okay, so now that we have that, any question first on this?
I thought that that equation for the that property of the time evolution operator was independent of whether the Hamiltonian was actually time independent. Because it, time independence, what guarantees is that you can write u of t2 comma t1 as u of t2 minus t1. What?
Yeah, so so you have an exponential of an operator, okay, here, where did I write it? Yeah, here. And so what you're saying is here that you have something like, so let's say A and B are two, my length of, and you want to decompose it like something like this. Okay, so this is what we're doing in practice.
No, I understand how you arrived to that equation, but I think it's independent of whether the Hamiltonian is time dependent or not.
Yeah, so let me just finish. So you know that here, when you have operators to decompose this, you need to be careful with this. What is the commutation relation between the H, the operator AH and BH here? But because it's what you're using is that, what's the name of this?
The Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff.
Thank you, yeah. And when it's time dependent, then you don't have this commutation. So you have some, so you have some correction then? So then you're saying that it's...
I mean, the formula of U as an exponential of the Hamiltonian when the Hamiltonian is time dependent, that doesn't work, right? I mean, you lose that formula.
Yeah. But you still have a kind of, well, it's a generalization of the exponential because it's a time-ordered exponential that you have.
I think that with that time-order exponential, that property of the use remains true, which is something that you would expect, right? Because that property is saying something very simple whether the Hamiltonian is time-dependent or not, which is that if you want to evolve a particle from time t1 to t2, or from time t1 to t, and then from t2 to t2. That doesn't seem something that depends on whether the Hamiltonian depends explicitly on time or not.
Okay, so let me come back on that. You're intuitively you like that this property is preserved. Then mathematically, we're thinking that it's true at the first order and you have correction, but maybe you're right that the time ordered exponential is going to work nicely on that. So yeah, I will come back on that tomorrow. Thanks for your comments. Okay, so yeah, this is a good point. Thank you. So I will double check. Usually, everything also that is done in the in path integral is done with time independence. So I will double check what are the consequences when it's not the case. Okay, so now I want to use that and use the fact that I have divided my interval into n equals subinterval. So at the end, this means that, and this, I think I already wrote it on Monday, I mean that you can write it as a product. So of many propagator that is defined now on a small interval. Okay, where here the difference between tau I and tau I minus 1 is just this epsilon. And I'm missing the last one here that is from n minus 1. Okay, so what is the interest here now is that we can now focus on first one of these objects, which is the propagator for a subinterval n. Okay, so yeah, on Friday, I think I did a typo with the time interval here. So check this. Yeah, this is the correct formula. Okay, so now we can focus on one of these objects, and the interest of this object is that this is equal okay, where epsilon can, when n is going to go to the infinity, which is the limit that we want to take at the end, this is small, okay? And then, so this will be the first step. Now, what we want to do is first study this object. So instead of I, I'm going to use the subscript n, but small n, but it's the same thing. Which should be easier because we have this small interval thing. And then can we take the limit n goes to infinity? Is it well defined? Will it be just something that we take kind of formally? And then, yeah, we're going to see. OK, so this is what we're going to do now. So again, if we do that for v equals 0, then we obtain the same expression as here, except that here it's a small, it's an epsilon, and this is for xn minus xn minus 1. But we can do that now for v different from 0. Okay, so let's write explicitly what is this object. So this is my first part. Where, let's write again explicitly what I want to do. Where h now is this p square over 2m plus v of x. And the idea is that now I'm going to expand that at the first order. So this is an identity, minus epsilon over h bar times this operator, plus some correction in epsilon square. OK? So here, what I got is that, so let's write it explicitly, maybe. H bar, so this is an epsilon p square v of x on xn minus 1. Then, so the first term is this one. So I'm using the normalization property between on this x basis that give me a delta function. And then I need to study what is this object. So plus V okay, so how would you study this thing? It's kind of yeah, the same thing that I guess you had to do for the v equals 0 case in the tutorial. How do you get this matrix element here? So you have this operator P. Sorry?
So it is rendered corresponding to P.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so here you just want to say that this is xn. So I have this p square p Okay, so here again, I'm just using, the idea is, so we start from what we have seen in the canonical framework. We start from this Schrodinger picture, and we want to derive the path integral formulation. But yet, here we are in the derivation process, so we don't have, we're only using tools from the canonical approach, okay? We are not yet using anything from the path integral. So now, let me recall you that x, which we computed on Friday, is that, so just to be sure with the sign, h bar and the normalization vector was okay, and by definition, p is the eigenvector of this operator p. Yeah, sorry.
Why do we apply on p if v is a function of x that we could maybe expand in terms of x? Maybe?
Yeah, so we're going to make the assumption that v is Hermitian, so we can still kind of apply it on x, but then we want to get rid of this p operator, okay? Do you see another way to do it?
Okay.
Yeah, but you're right that the v of x is going to...
I think we're going to separate the scalar product before and then make the p projection.
Yeah, you can,
It will be the same.
Yeah, at the end it's the same, okay? Because anyway, what we're going to see that indeed, when I make this assumption that v is only a function of x, then we're going to see that the only p dependence is going to come from the same thing as the free case, meaning when v is equal to zero and can be factorized out. So we're going to have the same, in fact, result plus the v of x. So yeah, indeed we could. Okay, so here what we get now is, so I'm using this result here, h bar of, so let me write it correctly, p square, where now p is just a function of, so I'm still have my integration, sorry, dp. Now p is a number, okay, of x of n time this exponential that I have here, so which is going to be xn minus xn minus 1. And time p. Okay. Okay, so this is anything I need now. So in fact, I can even rewrite all this thing as an exponential and keeping the, oh yeah, here, sorry, I forgot to specify that, of course, this is not exact, okay? It's an approximation up to the order epsilon, okay? We kind of, okay, so let me rewrite this object now, and I can in fact rebuild my exponential. So what I get is that this is dp exponential I. One time, I can say that this term one plus this term is just the exponential minus epsilon plus okay, because what I've been doing here is just rewriting this delta function as this exponential, okay? So So now if you expand that, this order, what you get is indeed this one, which is this term, minus this epsilon, which is this term, okay? So here I'm just using kind of the representation of the Fourier transform, if you want, of the delta function. So you go from here to here. Okay, so what can you notice now is that what is it, where is the dependence in SPI? As Remy already noticed, it's only like in the, yeah, in the free part, meaning that the V is independent, and since it's an exponential, it can be factorized out. Okay, so what do you get? It's just this exponential of P squared plus a linear term in P. Okay, so this is exactly the same calculation you had to do in the tutorial on Friday. And at the end, what you're going to get when you integrate over the P is the same function as here, where you just use the fact that you're dealing with a Gaussian integral. So there are different ways to compute it explicitly. Either you say that, indeed, this is a Gaussian integral where I can complete the square with this linear term, okay, and I got it. Or you could also kind of recognize that this is a Fourier, like this term, give you the Fourier transform of a Gaussian, which is also exactly given by that. So it's kind of two ways of computing it that are, of course, are equivalent. So at the end, you're going to integrating over P is going to give you this term, except that instead of x prime, you get this xn and x minus 1. And instead of this big time interval, you get the epsilon time interval, multiplied by this exponential of minus epsilon h v of x. Okay? So let's write it explicitly here. So what we get, so here it's because the important part is that V independent of P. Again, to go from this line to this line, I use the Fourier transform of the delta. So here, you can rewrite this as just M over 2 pi h bar. Now, instead of tau prime prime minus tau prime, I have this epsilon times this exponential of minus I didn't forget the square, that's good. M divided by this. I have the epsilon internal. And now I have minus epsilon h bar . Okay, so this is kind of the result from step one, meaning what is the propagator for one subinterval. Okay, so what is the next step? Once we have that, what do we need to? So again, the idea is to write our propagator as the path integral. So what is the next step? Yeah, so we need to, so now we have one of this element, okay? Now we need to take this product and see if we can take this limit n goes to infinity, okay? So this is kind of steps two, but even before taking the limit, we need to kind of take the product. So what is, we have, so then n factor in this, in our finite object. So the idea is to, again, rewrite this propagator, which is just the matrix element of your time evolution operator. But you remember that the time evolution operator is kind of a fundamental object. If you know it, then you can, you know all your state, evolution of all your operator, depending on which representation you are. So you can, you know how to solve your quantum mechanical problem. So now this is going to be we want to take n goes to infinity, so we have a limit of let me write it first, this factor, because it's kind of be seen, it can be seen in the merger. And I have n of them, okay, so n divided by 2. Let me try to, okay, combining all the factor ups there, and I have n factors. Then I have the product of n goes from 1, n minus 1. So I have n minus 1 integration here, because you, we divide the time interval into n, but you remember that you just, how the x is appearing is because you introduce the resolution of identity. So you're going to introduce n minus 1 resolution of identity for a time interval that is dividing into n pieces. Okay, so everything seems to be kind of consistent here. And then I will have a big exponential like this that I'm going to write, say that this is an action, and let me, I'm going to write it explicitly in a minute. The E here mean Euclidean in this, it's, and this comes from the fact that we did the weak rotation. Okay, so here just to make here, and we're going to see what is the difference between the Euclidean action and this comes from the weak rotation that we perform. Where, so what is explicitly this object? This object is exactly what we wrote here with the sum, okay? So I have a sum, okay, equal 1 to n here, I said, of m minus 1 divided by epsilon, sorry, plus this epsilon okay, so here you see I'm factorized minus 1 over h bar. And since I have a product of exponential, it's an exponential of the sum, which is here, okay, exactly here. Okay, and so in fact, this expression here is, so if you want to compute something explicitly, this is the expression you should use, because then we're going to see that in fact this n limit is just going to be a kind of formal thing. We don't really know how to take it very well, but don't worry, we will have, we will do that just for the kind of free particle, and then we will find a way. The idea of the path integral is that you kind of find a way to always go back to something you know, or to do some yes, some perturbation around something you know. So this is going to be the starting point to compute explicitly the free particle case that in fact you already did in the tutorial, so I won't spend too much time on it. But so here, let's still take this limit formally. So now I'm going to factorize by this epsilon, okay, and take the limit and take the limit n goes to infinity, which is the same thing as epsilon goes to infinity. So if now we factorize, so on this expression first, we factorize by epsilon, and we take the limit epsilon goes to zero, okay? What do we get here is what we call the Euclidean action. So here it's not yet the Euclidean action because it's a discrete one, if you want. So the limit epsilon goes to zero of this discrete action is then going to be where this integration is coming from this epsilon, okay? That's why we need to also factorize. So from m over 2, then we're going to interpret this as the derivative. Plus v of this is what we call the Euclidean action, where the paths here are x of tau, are continuous, but are not differentiable. If you remember, the way they are built is like you have this kind of thing, okay? Your path has object like this. Of course, this becomes very small, but still you have something continuous that a priori is not differentiable. Okay, so this means that this dx over d tau is kind of just a formal notation here. And here, this is what we call the Euclidean action.
Sorry, does the path differentiable or not?
No, they are continuous but not differentiable a priori.
How do we determine the value of dx?
So then in practice, you're going to work with that. It's just what I'm telling you is that, like, so I'm not going to spend too much time on what is this. So maybe let me finish to write what is the final result, because we also have a kind of issue with to define this kind of what is going to be the measure, that we're going to interpret as a measure on all possible paths, okay? That in practice, things are going to work very well, but mathematically, there are still many open questions to define this kind of thing. Okay, so in practice, you're going to use that, but I just want to mention where are the mathematical kind of issue here. So, but just before here, maybe just on this Euclidean action. So, do you see anything? Yeah, are you okay with this expression? For an action? So usually you see that
the fact that usually the Lagrangian would appear minus v, right?
Yeah.
But that's because we rotated.
Okay. So yeah, this is just the point I wanted to make. Good to notice it is this plus here. Okay? And indeed, this is how we define Euclidean action. Then you have a sign difference between the you have a relative sign between the kinematical and potential terms that indeed come from the weak rotation thing that we're doing. Okay, so I let you check explicitly. Well, we're going to rewrite things in the usual, redoing a inverse weak rotation to go back to the normal thing, but check it explicitly that you're okay with this kind of things. Okay, so let's take, before going back to your question of if this object will define or not, what does it mean? Let's take this formal limit here in this expression now, okay? So I think this was my last blackboard on this. And then we can discuss more in detail. Because it's the last step, before getting what we call the path integral in the configuration space. So we're almost there. Okay. And then we're going to see in practice how we use that. Okay, so now we take the formal limit here. And so by taking the limit, which is kind of formal, we get the expression we're looking for, which is that we have a, so here, be careful with this notation. And we're here, the paths we are considering are the ones satisfying some boundary condition, meaning that x at tau prime prime is x prime prime, it's the final point. So the initial and final point are fixed. Okay, so this is the expression that we were looking for, and then I'm going to give a few remarks on it. So this is what we call the configuration. Path integral, and here we kind of derived it for any Hamiltonian here, just making the assumption that v is only a function of x. So, so what is this integration here? Here, this integration is viewed as an integration of a whole function x of tau that has this boundary condition are satisfied. Okay, so this is why we say that we sum over all paths. This is what this formal integration means here, and this gives you the weight of each path. Okay, where here you have the weight for each path, which is given by this exponential of minus 1 over h bar over s. So here, this is kind of how we denote the notation I'm using for the integration measure for the path integral. And of course, you have to distinguish that from the ordinary integration for an ordinary integral. Okay, so this is not an ordinary integral. To indeed perform an explicit calculation, this expression should really be viewed as a notation for the more precise expression that you have here.
Okay.
Where you have it here in terms of everything is discrete. And this is just a more precise expression So from n goes to infinity, you kind of get this formal expression. And here in this measure, we are hiding a normalization factor that is this one. Okay, which of course is going to diverge when n goes to infinity. But one important point is that it's not going to depend on the potential, okay? You remember all this factor is coming from the fact that we know how to do this integration over P, and the integration over P is really only the free part. So what is going to be the idea is that in practice, what we're going to do is to always normalize things by the free case or by another K that we know how to compute. And so in particular, we're going to see that the V equals zero case is usually a good example. So, and then these factors are going to drop out, okay? Because we can, since it's independent, so this is entering formally in the definition of this measure term. That I use this notation, so you have different notation in the literature, and that is divergent. But the good point, so minus is that divergent when n goes to infinity. The positive point is that it's independent of V. Okay, so we can always normalize by dividing. So we will use in practice normalization by dividing by a path integral of reference that is going to be the path integral for V equals zero. Okay, more in practice. So these are just some remarks. Independent. So can you read here? Sorry, maybe it's too. Yeah, so this was just on this factor. It's entering this definition of the measure here, since it's divergent, but since it's independent of V, we can deal with that by normalizing with using a path integral that we know, and in particular, usually we take the case V equals zero. Okay, so maybe before taking questions, just let me do the inverse weak rotation that you get the classical action that you're familiar with. So inverse weak rotation, you will just get that the matrix element of your time evolution operator are now really written in a similar way as before. Again, you have this measure. You also have the condition, boundary condition here, where here you will reintroduce an I. And where then your action is your usual action, meaning that you have the usual sign between P and V. Dx over dt squared minus V of x. Okay, and so before stopping here, so we started with an object that is a matrix element of an operator, okay? And so what can be surprising in this new expression is that now it's expressed only in terms of classical function, okay? You don't have any operators anymore. Here it's really your action in terms of classical function. So where does the quantum aspect, the quantum behavior can be coming from? Okay, usually you're kind of in the canonical framework, you're saying, oh, I have this non-commutativity that is translating by the fact that I'm dealing with operator instead of just number of valued function. This translates most of the quantum behavior of my system, okay? So here we started with something at least quantum, okay? Quantum in the sense you're familiar with, meaning that it's written in terms of operators. And we end up with this kind of formal expression, but we're going to see that it's very efficient. And also, even if mathematically there are still open questions, we can use it efficiently in some contexts. In many contexts, it's going to be more complicated to perform calculation using that. But in some contexts, it's going to be useful. And also some interpretation of some problem will be almost impossible without this formalism. So what is your, how do you see, where is the quantum aspect coming from here? Do you have an idea?
We're summing over possible histories, right?
Yeah.
Because I have a defined trajectory.
Yeah, very good. So here, the important point is that this action, usually when you, in classical mechanics, you have an action, then you look at the, you maximize or minimize your action, okay, and you get your classical equation, and this is all the dynamics you want. Here, we're really summing over all possible paths, okay? And of course, we're going to see that the classical path has some preference, at least in some limit, but we're going to look at the semi-classical limit. But here we're really summing over all possible paths, okay? And when h bar is going to go to zero, the contributing paths are going to be close to the one of the classical trajectory. But otherwise, yeah, it's really over all possible paths. So this is kind of fundamentally different. A question? Yeah.
So why exactly do we do the weak rotation, just to compute the integral?
The weak rotation is really just was initially to do. So here, you remember, I don't know, in the tutorial you did something and you had to deal with complex integration, remember? Because we didn't, in the tutorial I asked you not to do the weak rotation. So you have to do some complex analysis. So here, just a way to avoid it, if here, this is really, when we do this integration up here that I didn't redo, but it's really just a usual Gaussian. And also we're going to see that this path integral thing is really used in statistical mechanics. And to get the thermal function or the thermal partition function, it's really exactly this object, but weak rotated. OK? But just, yeah. But yeah, there is no physical meaning here. OK. Any questions at this stage? So again, yeah, this is formal. Then in practice, you're going to work with the derivative of x. You're going to integrate, but we're going to apply, see how it we can compute explicitly this path integral for the free particle, meaning when I say explicitly, meaning that we're going really to use this expression in terms of the discrete action. But then we're going to see that in practice, you're going to always go back to something you know, and it won't be so complicated. OK, so the free particle, you mainly did it in the tutorial. So I'm just going to recall the different steps, maybe, to make sure that this is clear to everyone. And then, then we can go to the semi-classical expansion. And also maybe one important point here is that something you're losing in the usual quantum description is kind of a notion of trajectory for a particle, okay? Whereas here you recover it. So for some, depending on which experiment you're looking at, it's kind of nice to have this kind of interpretation, okay? So at least it's really play a role here. And it's also offer some better viewpoints on some issue, in particular issues that are going to involve topology. So maybe in the tutorial, if we have time, I will try to make a question, for example, on the Aronoff-Bohn effect. And of course, then when you're going to go to quantum field theory, we see that to quantize gauge theory is going to be almost impossible if you don't have the path integral formulation, okay? So there are kind of problems that are much easily done using this configuration path integral. Now we are going to just do the case of the free particle, and you're going to see that this is much more complicated. So you could ask, why are we doing that? But then it's because just this framework is more useful in other contexts. And again, having the expression of the free particle is useful because we're going to, for example, use it for normalization or this kind of thing. OK, so let's just take the time to give you what is the case of the free particle, if there is no question. OK, so this is the one I want. OK, this is the expression I was looking for. So where did I put my thing? OK, so in fact, and this was on this blackboard. It's kind of few lines to compute the propagator for the free particle using the canonical spec. So we already had the expression, okay, that even we used here because it's the same thing that is coming out as the merger term. But so let's now see what would this mean to use the path integral, okay? So using the path integral for the free particle, so here it's just an explicit example. Mean that we want to use this, okay? And so we have a limit.
Sorry.
That we will have to take. We have this normalization factor that is two. And we have n minus one integration. And then we have this exponential of this discrete action that now v equals zero, so we only have the first term, okay? So we have this sum from k equal one to n of m over two. Okay, so really here what I'm doing, I'm just really writing this to kind of let you know what does it mean next, because this is for v equals zero, so meaning v equals zero. This object, you know how to compute that very efficiently from the canonical approach. So what would this mean to compute that using the path integral? This means that you want to kind of compute that explicitly, meaning what do you have to do? So if you expand that, you see that what is this is kind of many Gaussian integrals that are coupled together, okay? And so normally you should have done this computation with maybe without the weak rotation, so you have an I, so, but still it's some Gaussian integral here that you have to do. So here you have to remember that, of course. So what is this object? It's like many couple just Gaussian. So really, yeah, you can evaluate that still explicitly and exactly, okay? And you did, so C. I think it was tutorial 6 Friday for you guys. And where I think I ask you to do a change of variable that makes things a bit easier, but not completely. So then at the end, what you get when you perform all this Gaussian integration, you still have the limit. Cannot gain. And so this factor is still here, m over pi h bar epsilon, n over 2. And then you have this 1 over square root of n. And coming out of the Gaussian integration, you have this factor. And you have the square root coming from the Gaussian. So you have n minus 1 of them, then the divided by 2 is just the square root, the usual square root from the Gaussian integration. And then you have still a factor. So you're integrating over x1 to xn minus 1. So here you have the xn and x0, that are the x prime and x second, that should be left out of the integration. And you recover them at the end, divided by 2n h bar epsilon. Okay, so this hopefully you can still read. Sorry, the mess. Okay, so this can be a bit simplified. I'm going to do the simplification for you, and then you're going to let me know if you recognize this object. M pi and epsilon minus M divided by 2N Okay, so the idea is that we want to recover the expression that was here, if you remember. So, so in particular, I want to take this limit n goes to infinity or epsilon goes to zero. But do you remember what is this n epsilon? That you have n epsilon here. Yeah, what is it? Sorry. Yeah, it's a time interval, okay? The full time interval, so I can call it big T here. And this is fixed, so the idea is that you take this limit n goes to infinity, epsilon goes to zero, by keeping fixed this T, okay? Which is your, so T is this n time epsilon, which is this star prime, the star prime. Okay, so in fact, where is then the n dependence? It's gone, okay? So it's kind of a trivial limit, which is nice. Since okay, so here what you get for V equals zero kind of gets the usual what you're expecting, get that K is equal of M divided by 2 par H bar T. You still have a square root here, and then you have an exponential of minus time m. Okay. So let me just rewrite this factor here. So up to this factor one over h bar, but right now we don't really care. So this is really t times one of m, and then I have this ratio. So what is, does it tell you, how would you interpret this expression? So, which system are we considering? We're considering a free particle. What would be the action of a free particle?
It's a straight line.
Yeah, so it just means that, and what is a straight line? It's a classical motion, okay? So what is that? This is just your action for your free particle evaluated at the classical solution. Okay, you can see it. We're here, yeah, I don't need to make the distinction between Euclidean or not. The only, fact that it's Euclidean is that I don't have a I here, I have a minus. But, okay, so what is this result here? So, and that's why this was still kind of instructive, even if you did it in the tutorial, to go back on that, is because we have this interpretation. H bar. So we still have this factor that I cannot really rewrite now, but this is okay. Of evaluated we're here. By this I mean the classical x of c is the classical solution. Okay, indeed, here this is the action of a free particle moving along the classical path, which is, as Remy mentioned, it's just a straight line, okay? The classical path for a free particle is a straight line. And so here, you can see that you have this, and this is already interesting here, is that this propagator is going to have two distinct factors. One of them is this phase, exponential of minus where it's evaluated at the classical solution. And this is a kind of general feature that we're going to go back, okay? Is that you will be in any, most of cases, you will be able to write your propagator as a phase that is evaluated on the classical part and another factor, okay? Okay, so this was, so this is, yeah, this this kind of a general, even if we did it for the feature. Okay, any question here? Okay, so if there is no question here, I'm going to start the semi-classical expansion. And for this part, technically, you need to be familiar with two different things. So first, kind of general Gaussian integral, but you already, so in the tutorial, you work with the complex one. Here, the idea is that you need to work with a kind of multivariable one, so where you're going to have a, deal with a matrix, and then you need to take the determinant of, the result is going to be given in terms of the determinant of a matrix. But we're going to come on that. And the other important technical part that you need here, so let me know if you're all familiar with that, is the notion of functional derivative. Everyone is familiar with that? So I have the yes. So who is the no?
I mean, besides the like front end stuff, I haven't seen.
Okay, but you kind of reviewed it quickly in the front end. But okay, good to know. Okay, so just I'm just going to write here the definition that we keep it in mind, and then we're going to see explicitly how to use it in our specific example, but at least the definition is written. So if I have a functional, meaning that it's a function of kind of another function, then my functional derivative, that usually we did not like this, is defined by, so I'm going to use a test function. And yeah, so I'm just going to write this definition here. So here, the way you compute that is by taking the limit. So it's, this definition is very similar to the usual expression, you know, of the derivative, except that now it's not just at a given point. It's in terms of function divided by your epsilon, or in practice, usually what you do is you take the derivative of with respect to epsilon of this function evaluated and then you take epsilon goes to zero. Okay, so this is just the definition, and we're going to use it in a few moments. So, and then if it's still not very, if you're still not very clear with that, I will kind of try to add some question in the tutorial tomorrow. Okay, so this, I guess this expression is kind of standard, so I don't need to keep it. Yeah, don't hesitate to let us know if, well, of course, there are all the things that are not only technical, but more conceptual. So this, but if there are some technical stuff that you're not really familiar yet, this is a good moment to try to work on it, because then you're going to use this kind of thing a lot in QFT, and it's going to go much faster. Okay. So here is a semi-classical expansion that I want. And yeah, because this is kind of one of the advantage of this formalism is that it's kind of nice, it's easy to study the semi-classical expansion when h bar goes to zero. okay? And that we can really compute what is the leading term and then the correction. And we're also going to see that in some specific case, in particular when the Lagrangian is just quadratic, like for example the harmonic oscillator one, then in fact doing this classical semi-classical expansion, just going to the first leading term is going to give you the exact expression of your path integral, so which is kind of nice. Okay, so here, so let's consider again this Euclidean action. And then the idea is that to do the path integral, you can kind of choose as you will do in a usual integration when you integrate a system, kind of choose the variable that you prefer, okay? And in particular here, what I want to do, so here, these are my x of tau denotes my path, okay? But I can choose to center all my path around the classical solution, okay? So the idea here is that, let's say that x, I know the classical solution that I'm going to denote. And of course, we're going to see that this kind of expansion is really interesting if you know this classical solution. And we want to be able to specify the boundary condition. So usually we're going to choose the one that has at tau prime prime, it's x prime prime. So by definition, this is the solution of this equation. Where here, really, you can write the variation of your action as the functional derivative of your action. And if you do, it's a good exercise for you to redo this computation using the definition. What you should recover is the Euler-Lagrange equation, of course. Okay? But using just the definition that I just gave you, it's a good thing. So the idea now, the change of variable I want to do is really just to shift my x of tau and center it on this x of c, okay? So here, I want to do this kind of change of variable where I want to consider the paths that are centered around this, around the classical solution. So we want to consider trajectory of the type. X of tau is x of c plus some correction. And we're going to see that it's nice to introduce this square root of h here, where the u is here going to be our fluctuation around the classical solution. And so since we choose x of tau already satisfying the boundary condition, here we're just going to require that and then the idea is that we can now do a Taylor expansion of this action, okay, in h bar. And so by using the usual definition of the functional derivative here, we can write this object as the power series, okay? So here, I'm going to introduce this h bar here. Because, so the exponential that you have is the exponential of minus s over h bar. So let's do compute directly this object. So h bar minus 1. Where here, for x, I'm using this this change of variable. So what I'm going to get is that the first term is going to be, of course, the evaluation of my action on the classical solution. And then I'm going to get 1 over h bar. The first variation of my action of x of tau that I'm going to evaluate as x is equal to xc. So this is the first contribution. Then I have the second order, 1/2 of d tau 1, d tau 2, u 1. And then I have the second derivative. So let's write this long expression explicitly and then see what we can say. Okay, but again, this object is going to be evaluated as x is equal xc. And then I could go further. And we're going to see, I'm writing explicitly because it's going to be interesting to see in which condition this term is going to vanish. So du1, oh, d tau1, tau2, and then I have the third derivative. Okay, so here it's 3, and then it's x tau 1 and again this is going to be evaluated at x equal xc, and this is of course just an approximation, so I have a plus tau of h bar. Okay. Okay, so here what I did is really just an expansion . Okay, so obviously what can we say about the first term? So this is, by definition, it's 0, okay? This, by definition, is because I've chosen to evaluate that at the classical solution, okay? So by definition, this is the equation of motion satisfied by the classical solution. And then if we stop at this order, if first we don't consider this one, what can we say? Is that to compute the path integral of any system is just going to, at least at this approximation, is just going to be a Gaussian integral, okay? So let's just write this and then we're going to see what are these terms in general. So if you stop, so if it's the expansion just in term with the second derivative here, so until, well, let's just write this a big term. So you get that your path integral representation of your object can be seen as just, so you have an overall factor that I'm going to explain where this comes from, minus 1 over h bar, your action evaluated on the classical path, okay? So this is coming from this term. And then you want to take, you remember that your measure is summing all possible over all possible paths. So now you're summing over all possible kind of fluctuation if you want. That as and here you have now this kind of measure here, and the term that you need to compute is of this form. If you forgot about the third term that I wrote, if we just stop at this extension, okay, this is what you get. So here, again, it's going to go back to what we just seen in the case of the free particle. You have a first term, a phase that is just the action evaluated on the classical action, and then another contribution, where here you need to integrate over all possible, you integrate over the fluctuation, okay? And the idea here is that it's, in this limit, at least, it's going to reduce to a Gaussian integral, and we're going to see that for some specific action, so in particular the action, the system described with quadratic Lagrangian, this is in fact going to be the exact computation, okay? So what is also this n factor here? So this n factor is coming into account the transformation by the Jacobian, but it's not super important here because it's just an overall constant. And so it's not going to, what is important is really which factor are going to assess the importance of the different trajectories, okay? Because it's kind of the idea of the path integral is that each trajectory, each possible path is going to be associated with a weight, and this weight is going to, the importance of each path is going to be encoded this here. So any kind of overall factor is usually not, at least at this moment, not very important, okay? So yeah, I'm not going to, if I stop now, okay. Yeah.
How did we get rid of the German third derivative?
Yeah, so no, here I haven't got rid of it yet. Okay. Oh yeah, it's maybe because I have a yeah, so here it's even a square root. Okay. Yeah. You can, so then we're going to see, yeah, that you can implement it. So for tomorrow, I think as a good exercise, if I manage to do it, I will try to make it part of the quiz, is kind of try to study what are these, what do you get here, and what do you get here, okay? Because the next step now is to look more carefully at the quadratic term. So the question is now, what is that? What are the contributing terms here? And what is the third covariant, the third functional derivative? When you evaluate that on the and maybe just one thing I can check with you since I only have 2 minutes left that will be useful is, so here this is a question mark, this is the next step. Okay, so what we're going to do is to compute this in general, and then we're going to focus on the case of the harmonic oscillator, because again, as I mentioned to you, usually we're going to try to go back to something we know. So here the kind of system we know are going to be the free particle where we know we have a nice representation of the we know how to compute the propagator, but the harmonic oscillator is going to be another one. And then we can look at correction to this harmonic oscillator. So even looking at the anharmonic oscillator, this kind of thing, or harmonic oscillator with a source, and what can we say, okay? So this is going to be done in general. And then tomorrow we'll see the case of the harmonic oscillator. And and then we're going to conclude on this kind of approximation method and go to another one. Okay. So just something that you need if you want to compute this explicitly, maybe, is what would be, so if I give you that, the functional derivative of this function, and I'm telling you that this is equal so hopefully I'm not, depending on the convention you choose, you have different signs. So I let you check this. Okay. How do you get this expression? Because as you see, if you look at what is the expression of the action, you have some dx over d tau, okay? And you want to take the functional derivative with respect to x at different tau, so you need to know this kind of expression. Okay, so I don't want to start anything, so I think it's good if you try this by yourself and try to think about also the different terms here, and then we can finish that tomorrow. So there is no tutorial today. Normally I should send you a quiz, but again, I was thinking to go further, so I will see if I managed to adapt the quiz or not. But yeah, I will send you an email.